Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Bond early voting begins April 25th by OA News. The early voting period to cast a ballot for the Ector County Independent School District's special bond election will start on April 25th. Early voting will continue until May 3rd. Voters can also vote on Election Day, which will be May 7th. There will be one early voting location, the Ector County Courthouse Annex, located at 1010 East 8th Street. Voters can cast their respective ballots from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. April 25th to April 29th, and 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. May 2nd and May 3rd. The special bond election will be two separate propositions, as the $398 million bond includes a new comprehensive high school, technology upgrades, a career and technical education center, and maintenance and life cycle repairs. Proposition A for $215,255,000 includes maintenance and life cycle repairs, replacement for school buildings at a cost of $130,255,000. This includes various projects for electrical, mechanical, plumbing, fire and line safety, and others at schools and auxiliary buildings. Also, construction of a new career and technical education center for $70 million. This would include classroom and lab space for programs like welding, construction, health science, automation, and process technology, HVAC, plumbing, and others. It would enclose an estimated at 150,000 square feet and include furniture, fixtures, and equipment. Classroom technology upgrades, $15 million, are also included. This would be classroom and or campus audio, a visual and multimedia refresh or additions. Proposition B for $183 million includes a new comprehensive 6A high school designed for 2,500 to 2,800 students with about 400,000 square feet. It would also include furniture, fixtures, and equipment. Woodward to speak at MC by OA News. The Midland College Davidson Distinguished Lecture Series will present legendary journalist and author Bob Woodward at 7 p.m. Thursday in the Al G. Langford Chaparral Center on the Midland College main campus. The event is free. Tickets are not required for general admission seating. More information is available on the Midland College website. A portion of Woodward's presentation will be to answer questions from the community. If you have a question, send to Rebecca Bell, rbell@midland.edu by 5 p.m. or on today, April 6th. Woodward's books are now available at the Midland College Bookstore and will also be available for sale at the Al G. Langford Chaparral Center on Thursday evening. Man charged with robbery of spa by OA News. A man accused of violently assaulting a woman at an Odessa spa has been arrested. An Odessa Police Department probable cause affidavit detailed the 33-year-old man was arrested after he robbed a spa owner of $200 at gunpoint in late March. Isaac Gerald Jackson was charged with aggravated robbery, a first-degree felony, and unlawful possession of a firearm by a felon, a third-degree felony. Jackson was booked into Ector County Law Enforcement Center on April 2nd and has two bonds totaling $65,000, jail records show. He was still in custody as of Tuesday afternoon. The probable cause affidavit detailed police received a report of an aggravated robbery at the Rose Garden Spa, located at 800 East 7th Street. Surveillance video showed Jackson in a white Ram truck circle the business and park in the area two separate times, starting at 1:05 p.m. That video showed the Ram truck driver Jackson exit the vehicle, cross the street, and enter the business at 1:13 p.m., the affidavit stated. Between 1:16 p.m. and 1:26 p.m., Jackson continuously assaulted the 62-year-old woman owner by striking her with his hand, strangling her, dragging her by the hair, striking her with a handgun, and attempting to force the barrel into her mouth. The victim told police Jackson was demanding money and took $200 from her and from a blue notebook that was located in the business. Jackson knowingly and intentionally threatened Shinn with a firearm, caused bodily injury, and placed her in fear of imminent death. The scene was processed and a fingerprint was located in what is believed to be a transfer of the victim's blood onto the blue notebook where the money was kept, the affidavit stated. Police say the fingerprint was submitted to AFIS and returned with a confirmed match to Jackson. A Texas driver's license photo was obtained for Jackson, was found to match the description of the man involved in the armed robbery. Jackson was also found to be a convicted felon out of San Jacinto District Attorney's Office as of March 25, 2013, for aggravated robbery, a first-degree felony. Jackson was found in possession of a semi-automatic handgun during the commission of the aggravated robbery. Odessa man dies in fatal collision by OA News. An Odessa Police Department press release detailed a 32-year-old Odessan died after he was involved in a two-vehicle head-on collision. The reported fatal collision happened at 10:30 p.m. April 2nd in the 6800 block of Fadre Road. Police say the investigation showed a Chevrolet Silverado operated by 32-year-old Richard Trevino of Odessa was passing in a no-passing zone while traveling northbound on Fadre Road, the press release stated. A Ram 2500 operated by 45-year-old Christopher Flores of Odessa was traveling southbound on Fadre Road. The Ram and the Chevrolet collided head-on in the southbound lanes of Fadre Road. Trevino was transported to Medical Center Hospital, where he died, next of kin has been notified. Flores and a passenger identified as 37-year-old Myra Mendoza of Odessa were transported to Medical Center Hospital and are in stable condition, the press release stated. The investigation continues. Obituaries. Shreda Joyce Banks Cook, Kirkwood, Washington. Shreda Joyce Banks Cook was born to the late Ralph and Irma Patrick in Oklahoma on June 1, 1941. Shreda passed away in Kirkwood, Washington on April 1st after a long bout with cancer. She was a widow of James Banks, formerly of Odessa. Shreda is survived by her children Cheryl Sanders, Cherie Martin, and husband Stephen, Stephen Sanders and wife Terry, and Becky Biggerstaff and husband Kenny. 15 grandchildren, 33 great-grandchildren, her sisters Sandra Adams and Karen Harms. She is preceded in death by her daughter-in-law Nita Sanders, her husband James Banks, and her parents. Renee Ormsby, Odessa. Renee Bodily Ormsby left this world on April 4, 2022. Renee Bodily was born May 10, 1933, to Sterling and Revae Hall Bodily. She was born and grew up in Vernal, Utah. She married Edward Ormsby October 21, 1950. Survivors include her son Jimmy Ormsby and wife Sharon of Odessa, daughter Venita Ormsby Jones, and husband Larry of Layton, Utah, son Sterling Ormsby and wife Lynn of Odessa, brother Sterling Verdon Bodily and wife Evelyn of Vernal, Utah, 18 grandchildren and 48 great-grandchildren. She is preceded in death by husband Edward David Ormsby, brothers Irving Vance Bodily and Larry Clell Bodily, sisters Velma Loy Bodily and Selah Bodily, parents Sterling Bodily and Revae Haw Bodily, and two grandchildren, Larissa Renee Ormsby and Taylor David Ormsby. Funeral services will be held Friday, April 8th at 2 p.m. at the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, 5401 John Ben Shepherd Parkway in Odessa. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Melvin Ray Hale, Odessa. Melvin Hale, age 94, passed away on April 2nd in Odessa. He was born October 3, 1927, in Fairbanks, Louisiana, to Carl and Jesse Hale. Melvin is survived by his two daughters, Helen Jansen and husband Richard, and Brenda Strickland and husband Mike. 7 grandchildren, 17 great-grandchildren, and 4 great-great-grandchildren, and numerous nieces and nephews. He is preceded in death by his wife Frances, son Ray, grandson Tim Overly, parents Carl and Jesse Hale, brothers J.C. and Bobby Hale, and sisters Gail Fletcher and Laverne Martin. The family will receive friends for visitation on Thursday, April 7th at 6 to 7 p.m. at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. Funeral services will be Friday, April 8th at 10 a.m. at Grace Christian Fellowship Church, with Mike Strickland officiating. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Death notices. Janice Lee Dunn, Odessa. Janice Lee Dunn, 56, of Odessa, died Sunday, April 3rd in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Jubilee the Great Tuttle, Midland. Jubilee, the great total zero of Midland, died Friday, March 18th in Midland. Funeral service is scheduled for 4 p.m. April 1st at Midland Bible Church. Arrangements are by American Heritage of Midland. Lattice LeDay-Vallis, Odessa. Lattice LeDay-Vallis, 90, died Monday, March 28th in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage of Midland.
Hi, this is Linda, and today I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram Health and Wellness section. This is Wednesday, April 6, 2022. Fourth West Texas Cancer Symposium is Saturday, by Midland Reporter Telegram. The Fourth West Texas Cancer Symposium is set for Saturday inside the Carrasco Room at Midland College. A press release from Midland Health indicated there is a $75 fee for physicians, a $50 fee for non-MMH employees, NPs, and PAs, and a $30 fee for MMH employees. The event will include presentations from a radiologist, general surgeon specializing in breast surgery, a pathologist, a pulmonologist, a gastroenterologist, and a reconstructive surgeon. Schedule. The following is a schedule of the 4th West Texas Cancer Symposium, which is slated for Saturday at Midland College. Registration and breakfast, 7:30 a.m. Update to screening breast MR in intermediate to high lifetime risk patients. Jess Delahite, MD, radiologist, 8 a.m. Managing high risk patients. Jennifer Dumeyer, BSN, RN, CVRN, CNBN, genetic nurse navigator, 9 a.m. The role of genomics in breast cancer. Sandeepa Masanura, MD, general surgeon, specializes in breast surgery, 9:30 a.m. Understanding breast pathology. William Klingensmith, MD, pathologist, 10:30 a.m. Lung cancer diagnosis and treatment. PK Patel, MD, PA, pulmonologist, 11 a.m. Lunch, noon. A patient's journey from diagnosis to survivorship, Katya Leeson, 12:30 p.m. Colorectal cancer prevention, Mrinal Patel, MD, gastroenterologist, 1:30 p.m. Medical ethics, shared decision-making, Roberta Case, MD, medical director at Community Children's Clinic and clinical assistant professor, Department of Family and Community Medicine, Texas Tech University Health Science Center, 2:30 p.m. Evolving trends in breast reconstruction, Kevin Cook, MD, reconstruction surgeon, 3:30 p.m. Call Charlis Rogers, RN, CNBN, at 432-221-3220 or email Charlis, CHARLISS, dot Rogers, RODGERS, at MidlandHealth.org to register. Samaritan Counseling. Brain's Power Can Help Fade Distressing Events, by Yvette Rodriguez. Samaritan Counseling. Let's imagine your parents argued while you were in your mother's womb. Would you believe it if I told you that your brain recalls the tension your mother may have felt? The brain recalls these events when you do not. What if you are in grade school and someone calls you a name? Even worse, what if you experience a traumatic event, such as physical abuse, rape, molestation, or war? Distressing and traumatic events may leave some memories trapped in the emotional receptors of the brain. As a result, certain triggers may generate an emotional response. Do you believe that you can heal from traumatic and distressing events? After being trained in eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing, EMDR for short, healing is possible. EMDR utilizes the brain's own healing power to fade these memories and allow your brain to reset. EMDR can help with many different mental health diagnoses, not just post-traumatic stress disorder. You may think it is impossible, but I have seen firsthand what appears to be a miracle for people who have struggled with mental health most of their lives. There is a visible sense of relief and peace as if the memories no longer torture them. If you struggle with mental health, Do not be afraid to ask for help. If Samaritan can be of any assistance, please do not hesitate to contact us at 432-563-4144. Research: 28% of 12 to 19-year-olds pre-diabetic, by Linda Searing, The Washington Post. U.S. residents on the cusp of developing type 2 diabetes include about 28% of youths ages 12 to 19, according to research published in the journal JAMA Pediatrics. They have a condition known as prediabetes, which means their level of sugar, glucose, in their blood is higher than normal, but not high enough to be diagnosed as having full-fledged diabetes. The researchers found that the percentage of youth with prediabetes has more than doubled in recent years, going from just under 12% in 1999 to 28% by 2018. It was found to be more prevalent among boys than girls and among youths who are overweight or obese. Among adults, about 96 million, or more than 1 in 3, have prediabetes, according to the U.S. Centers for Diabetes Control and Prevention. At any age, people with prediabetes are not only more likely to progress to type 2 diabetes, but are also at a higher risk for heart disease. Also, most people who have prediabetes do not know it because the condition usually has no symptoms. In most cases, prediabetes stems from a body's problem with turning glucose, which comes from the foods you eat, into energy. That requires the hormone insulin to help move glucose from the bloodstream to the cells. If the body does not make enough insulin or cannot use it as it should, called insulin resistance, too much glucose remains in the bloodstream. Then, various blood tests would indicate prediabetes or diabetes. That progression is not inevitable. Health experts say that medication may sometimes be needed to manage blood sugar levels. But for others, lifestyle changes, including a healthier diet, regular physical activity, and, if needed, weight loss, may prevent diabetes from developing.
To Your Good Health, by Dr. Keith Roach. Is it or isn't it cancer? Dear Dr. Roach, in 2015, I was diagnosed with a myeloproliferative neoplasm, essentially thrombocythemia. My question is simple. Is it cancer or not? There seems to be a fundamental disagreement between my oncologist and my hematologist about the C label. Not that it makes any difference treatment-wise, but I would like clarification. Answer. Cancer is the term given to hundreds of diseases that share uncontrolled cell division and the potential to spread to other parts of the body. Myeloproliferative neoplasm meets the definition and so are classified as blood cancers. Myeloproliferative neoplasms meet the definition and so are classified as blood cancers. However, as you say, whether it is or isn't cancer, it didn't used to be considered cancer. There are many types of cancers that have very good prognosis, including essential thrombocythemia. The overall survival in people with ET is good, and they have a normal life expectancy. The major issues with essential thrombocythemia, essential is an old term meaning we don't know why it happens. Thrombocythemia means there are too many clotting cells called platelets in the blood. Are the potential for blood clotting, as you might expect with many platelets. However, bleeding is a risk as well because the platelets don't always work normally. There are symptoms, though, to be related to damage to small blood vessels, which include headaches and lightheadedness. The most feared complication is transformation to acute leukemia. The fact that they can transform highlights why these are considered cancers. The prognosis in patients with ET that transforms to leukemia has historically been poor, but newer treatments are changing that.
This is the Dear Abby column. Friend traumatized after woman's shocking murder. Dear Abby, a dear friend I have known since we were children was murdered. She was lovely in every way, and I am bereft. I cannot process my grief over her untimely passing because it was accompanied by such trauma. Images of her murder flash through my mind, especially at night while I'm trying to go to sleep. They also wake me up in the morning. Talking about it makes it worse because it revives the horror, and also because people want to know details as though it is just a story. I feel it is disrespectful to her memory and my affection for her to reduce it to that. I'm usually a resourceful person, but I have no roadmap for this. It is of considerable relief that her killer was found, but the details revealed by the media have added to my trauma. I have had friends die at even younger ages from other causes, but not this. Some of our mutual friends are in the same boat as I am, so any guidance you can provide would be appreciated. Signed, Beside Myself in Illinois. Dear Beside Myself, I am so sorry for your friend's untimely and tragic death. Clearly, it was shocking and traumatizing for everyone she left behind. You are not obligated to satisfy the curiosity of anyone about the details. There is no limit to the amount of curiosity something like this can generate. All you have to say is you do not wish to discuss it, period. Although you didn't mention how long it has been since you lost your friend, because it is causing you to have nightmares, please discuss this with a licensed mental health professional. It may be painful, but it's the most effective way to work through this. Dear Abby, I have been dating my partner, Lizzie, for 5 years. We are both divorced and have created a blended family of 6 children. 4 are hers, 2 are mine. I'm within 10 years of retirement and have a decent net worth. Unfortunately, Lizzie has no savings and is unemployed. During our time together, I have paid for everything, which I'm okay with. I previously went through a nasty, contentious divorce. It was financially devastating. My ex still brings me back to court every year in an attempt to increase her support, which is a painful process. Lizzie would like us to get married, primarily for financial stability. I am resistant because I do not want the financial exposure of another divorce. However, this situation creates an inequality in our relationship. Can I address her concern without marrying her, or are we doomed? Signed, Scared of Court in California. Dear Scared, this is a question you should address with your attorney. There are ways you can ensure that Lizzie will be taken care of in the event of your death or incapacity, but they will require documentation. Your attorney can and should guide you in regard to this. You could write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.